Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming to OSP 431, Claims-Based Security. I set the expectation a little bit earlier. We lost about half the room, unfortunately, but I want to make sure that you are getting your money's worth, right? You guys spent a lot of money to come here, a lot of time. This talk is specifically focused on SharePoint and claims-based authentication and the things you have to think about for SharePoint and integrating claims and doing federation. So if you're looking at just a general federation talk, I believe there is another federation talk going on at the same time. I do not want to disappoint you, nor do I want to be disappointed with your feedback that I disappointed you. So I'll set the expectations one last time, give you one more chance, and then here we go. At the end of the day, when you walk out of here, here are the things we want you to understand. And here's the way we're going to go about doing it. We're going to give you a quick overview of, in general, of federation. Now, this is a 400-level talk. We're making a lot of assumptions. And the assumptions there are that you know a little bit about federation, you know a little bit about SAML. A bonus is that you have built a custom claim provider within SharePoint, and you've at least worked with general claims. Who has not or who does not meet these expectations? Who does not understand SAML, federation? Who does not understand these? It's not for you to walk away and leave. You will learn something. But I, again, want to make sure that we're setting proper expectations here. We're also going to talk about some common scenarios. So my name is Israel Vega. With me is Nathan Miller, and we're both from Microsoft. I work with customers as the part of the public sector, which is government contractors and government within Microsoft. And I am in Microsoft Consulting. Nathan works with Microsoft customers as well, but he's on the sales side where he's looking at what customers actually want to do with the technology. And when we got together to build this talk, this is about probably the fourth time we presented this, we looked at some very common patterns. We were hearing a lot of the same things. As we talked to each other, we said, here's some common patterns that we're seeing. We're going to talk about some of those common patterns as well. How we're going to go about doing that, we'll give you a quick level set on claims and federation just to make sure that we're all on the same page. And we're going to do a lot of demos throughout. We're also going to show you lots of code samples, XML and Visual Studio. At the end, we're going to have some fun with claims. We're going to talk about some of the other things you could do with claims-based authentication within SharePoint. So the first ones are kind of out of the box, also with some customization, but then we'll have some fun with it towards the end. Along the way, we will share some tips and tricks, and we'll show you some things that you also have to consider when you're integrating your own solutions with federation. The first thing we wanted to talk about is really understanding the two parts of the process. The first part of the process is what I call getting claimed, and that is the process of actually getting the claims that you're going to need. The other side of it is securing it with claims. These are two different processes that go on within SharePoint. We'll show you an example of that in a minute. At the end of the day, though, what we want to do is we want to make sure that the claim type, and value that the end user came in with equals the claim type and value that I've secured my content with on the SharePoint side. So what does that look like? So in this case, Susie here has a load of documents, and she loads them into a secure area. She's going to put a claim on there. In this case, she's putting a claim of a secure combination lock. Partner on the other side comes in with a set of keys and hits our federation gateway. That federation gateway can be ADFS, could be Active Directory, could be a third-party IDP, could be ping, SiteMiner or something else. We're going to do a transformation on that. It's one of the concepts you have to understand. Transformation is taking a claim and turning it into something else. In this case, we're taking the baby set of keys and we're transforming them into a set of baby keys. I'm sorry, a set of regular keys. The next thing you have to understand is around augmentation. Augmentation is taking the set of claims that the end user has and adding additional claims to that claim set. So in this case here, we're going to augment it with another set of keys, and we're going to pass that along to SharePoint. Within SharePoint, there's this concept called mapped claims and input claims, and incoming claims. And what that means is I'm going to get a set of claims from an IDP. That set of claims might be 10, might be 20 sets of claims, but within SharePoint, I can choose which claims I actually want to accept from that IDP, which ones do I want to map. In this case here, what I'm doing is I'm only mapping the strong set of keys with a silver set of keys. I'm going to pass those into SharePoint, and I get one additional chance within SharePoint to do something with those claims. I can augment those claims. In this case, I'm augmenting it with another set of keys, and I'm going to pass those in. But the part around getting claimed and securing with claims, in this case here, doesn't match, right? Because the claims that I received are not the claims that I've used to secure the piece of content. So what I'm going to do here in order to fix this is I'm going to change the actual claim set or the claim security that I have on the SharePoint side, and I'm going to change those to something that actually matches. So Long and short of this is that you do have to understand that there are two parts of the process. There's securing the site, but there's also the getting claimed. How do they actually achieve that claim set so that they can get access to their content? When you're looking at your solutions, these are kind of they're not the only questions that you have to ask yourself, but these are kind of the big ones. The first one there is, how will users be authenticated? Will they be using their Windows credentials? Will they be using a federation set of credentials like their Facebook ID or their Yahoo ID or their Google ID? How will they actually authenticate? The second one there is, how am I going to authorize those users to get content? Is the fact that they authenticated good enough? Or do I need to add some additional piece of information? Do they have to be in a particular group? Do they have to have a particular role? That's my second question I need to answer. Once I've answered those questions, now this is getting into the getting claimed part. How will those user accounts actually be managed, and how will they be provisioned? In Federation, the thing that's interesting is that most of the times you don't own the provisioning of those user accounts. Someone else is provisioning them, and they're getting access to your environment this way. What that does is it introduces an interesting challenge in the fact that if you don't understand the provisioning, you don't know the claims that are actually coming in. So you kind of have to understand how that process works. The fourth one there is the identifier of the user enough, or do I need some more? So if you're looking at things like in the public federation space, Live ID, if I authenticate with Live ID, I get what's called a PUID, which is a unique identifier for that user. If that's enough, the fact that they authenticated with Live ID, then I might be okay here. But if I need some additional information, I might have to do something else. The next one there is interesting when you're looking at multiple IDPs and federating with multiple providers. Are multiple user IDs allowed? There's a thing in the United States called, in the government space, called identity assurance, where specific identity sets and the way that individual users present credentials means something different. So if they use just a user ID and password, that's almost the equivalent of just getting a free email account, right? There's no way to vet that principle. So from identity assurance perspective, I'm going to put that pretty low. But if you're logging on with a secure laptop, with a CAC card, that's probably identity assurance of a little bit higher, because now I have multiple pieces of identity that user presented. So here you have to understand that when I'm federating with multiple IDPs, I might have multiple accounts. I might have a Facebook account, I might have a Google account, a Yahoo account. Which one of those do I need to accept, and can I accept any one of those? That's a key question to answer. The last two here are really around customization. Number six is, do I really need a custom claim provider? And we'll walk through what that means when you're implementing it in SharePoint. Number seven, we're not going to answer, but you do need to ask yourself this. A lot of times what we've seen in the blog sphere and in our customer sites is that they usually default to building a custom STS. An STS is not for the faint at heart, although it's easy to create within the wizard. It's not something that you just want to take on and default to. So we'll show you some examples of scenarios where you don't need to actually create a custom STS. You could do some things outside of that. That last scenario, though, we're not going to cover. That's more of a WIF STS type talk. But you do have to ask yourself, do I really need one of those? In a SharePoint space, there's some key principles that you have to remember. If I don't have it when I authenticate it, I can't use it for authorization. And that's by default. We'll show you some examples, again, on how to do that, how to get around some of those things. But in general, if I don't have it, if I don't have that claim set, I can't go back and add additional claims after they've been authenticated. I've got to actually have the user log out, log back in, and then get the additional sets of claims. So that's a key principle there. The next one there, we talked a little bit about incoming claims versus map claims. If I have not mapped it, I don't see it by default. I can get access. There's actually a blog post that shows you how to do that. But in general, you don't really get access to all the incoming claim set. The user identity there is dependent on the type, the way you authenticate it. So NT Bob, Windows Bob, is separate from Facebook Bob, which is separate from Google Bob. So the way you authenticate it in SharePoint means something. And we'll show you how to get around that through another scenario that we have. But in general, understand that. If you're looking at it out of the box, that's the way it works. Public federation and private federation, two different things. What we mean by that is, if I'm integrating with my partners and other customers, that's what I call private federation. I can negotiate some claims. I can negotiate a certificate. I can negotiate some things with a private federation. in the public federation space, when I'm looking at Google, Yahoo, or some of those third-party IDPs, I can't really negotiate with them. I can't ask for additional information. What they provide is what I get. So understand the differences between those, public federation and private federation, because they provide you some more options on the private side or on the opposite, where they don't provide you those options. And the last one there is that from a SharePoint security standpoint, the rules are not combined. The rules are or. So I'm either a customer or an employee. And if I meet any of that criteria, then I get access to my SharePoint site. At the end of the day, all of this is based on trust. And as with any relationship based on trust, it's very complicated. You have to make sure that you're trusting the other side, because that person that I'm trusting has access to some things that I don't have access to. In SharePoint, there's this thing called a trusted identity token issuer. And that, what that provides you is a set of claims mappings. When I run the PowerShell command to create my little claims mappings, that's what it gives me. I want to say, here are my incoming claims, and here are the map claims. Here's the way I want SharePoint to address that particular claim set. The other thing I get is I get a sign-in. I get the ability to sign in using that IDP. And that's what that provides me. So when I run that little PowerShell command, this is what I get. I get a login, and I get some claims mappings. Let's see what I get with a custom claim provider within SharePoint. A claims provider gives me the ability to do search. In a federated world, as I mentioned earlier, that identity exists somewhere else. So I've got to do something within my claim provider to actually resolve that user, to give a friendly experience to my users. The other thing that a claims provider gives me is the ability to do a resolve. And resolve is when you get the little red squiggly, if you work with this, that's what the resolve is. The last thing it gives me, a claims provider, is the ability to do claims augmentation. And we'll show you in a second what that means and where that fits in. So when I get a sign-in control based on every IDP that I've configured for my SharePoint box, at authentication time, I get a set of claim providers. All these claim providers will fire whenever you authenticate. And each one of those gets the opportunity to do something with the incoming claim set at authentication time. In this case here, I've got the Windows authentication and Azure ACS. You notice that Azure ACS does not have a subsequent claim provider. I'll show you what the effects of that is in a minute. At the end of this process, after I authenticate, I'm going to get a set of encoded claims. So I come in through the Federation Gateway, I log in, and I've gotten claimed with all the claims that I'm going to get. On the people picker side, so the securing side, I'm going to get this experience. And the way that this works is it maps to every claim provider, and whenever I'm doing searching and resolving in the UI, that's actually what I'm doing, is I'm invoking a claim provider, and I'm actually calling into some backend code that you have access to through an accessibility model. In this case, however, you notice that Azure ACS does not have a claim provider. So what SharePoint does is it says, oh, you're searching for T? Well, you've received this criteria, and I'm going to go ahead and search for that, but I have nothing to search against, so I'm just going to return what you search for based on the incoming claims mappings that you have. So in this case here, the Azure ACS has an email address and an identity provider. SharePoint says, oh, you must be searching for one of these, because they're all string types. So that's how it works out of the box. At the end of this, when I actually secure a piece of content, I'm actually creating an encoded claim. What does that encoded claim look like, and what does it do? We'll talk about that in a few slides. When I have a custom claim provider, however, I do want to associate that with a web application in a particular zone. And this is the way I do it. I can do it through PowerShell. I could also do it through code, through the API. In this case here, what I'm doing is I'm specifying that this claim provider is associated with this particular zone and this particular web application. Those claim providers are stored as a collection of claim providers and associated, so multiple of them fire. A quick bit about claims encoding. The thing that's interesting about this is that behind the scenes, when SharePoint actually creates these claim types and claims mappings, is that it encodes them, and it encodes them in an interesting way. It is farm specific, so for every particular farm that you have, all of these claims encodings will be unique to your farm. The custom claims encoding started Unicode character 500, and I believe that one is not the Enya character, but I think it's the umlaut or one of the other funny characters. But what it does is, as you add additional claims encodings, it will continue to increment that and keep that stored in a dictionary inside the farm. It is an immutable list, so by default, once you've created it, you cannot change it. If you do want to change it, you do have to remove your trusted identity provider, recreate it, and remap it. Once it has the encoding, that's the encoding it's going to have for life, for the life of your farm in any case. Values are also evaluated in lowercase when they come in. Thing to keep in mind there is when you have external identity providers, I believe Ping does this, where they have case sensitive. In our case here for SharePoint, it is going to be lowercase, so you have to make sure that you're evaluating things in lowercase. And those claims encoding, understand that those things are unique to the particular identity provider that you actually map in. There are some claim types, however, that will not, that will resolve the same way. In this case here, these are hard-coded within SharePoint. These are the way that they encode out of the box. So for example, if you use the thumbprint will always encode as D, as the character, ASCII character D. So there's some reserved ones and there's some custom ones. The ones that I talked about before was the custom ones. You'll have that there in the deck. If you download the decks, you can have that there for your reference. So with all that background out of the way, the first scenario that we normally hear customers do is using ADFS and integrating that with SharePoint. So they'll use SAML claims to come into SharePoint, but they still want a people picker-like experience.
Yes, so in the first scenario that we're going to show you, we're going to walk through kind of an ADFS scenario. The scenario that we're going to really focus on is one where maybe and potentially you've got a partner federation where you've got an external partner that you're actually federating and you want them to manage their IDs. And we're going to show you some of the rules that you might want to set up when you're federating multiple partners or multiple customers in a SharePoint type of environment. The other thing that we're going to do is look at, how do we actually improve that experience? So now that we've actually federated them, now that we've authenticated them, you know, how can we actually have a better user experience for looking for users and actually securing content in our SharePoint environment? And then, yep, so I guess let's go ahead.
Yep.
So as far as claim provider go, the way we're looking at in this claim provider, in this scenario, we actually are using the secure store to actually store credentials to actually query against Active Directory. So the only thing that we're using secure store for is basically our cached admin account for basically querying the Active Directory environment. In this scenario, we've actually got multiple Active Directories, and we're leveraging ADFS to federate those Active Directories. So in this scenario, I've got a Fabricam environment where I've got ADFS set up. It's a partner. We've already have the scenario where it's coming in. So we've already got the ADFS stood up over there. We're actually federating that ADFS in here. But one of the things I want to show you is that we've got ADFS actually has some flexibility as far as how we can actually put claims or custom claims into the pipeline before they actually log in to the SharePoint environment. So in this scenario, I want to go ahead and take a look at some of my claim rules. What I'm doing is when they log into the Fabricam environment, they pass through to my Contoso domain, and they actually are labeled to log in with their email address. We also pass in roles. So any groups that they belong to in their Fabricam environment, they can pass those through to the SharePoint land and just kind of show what that might look like. So you'll see on here, I can actually put custom claim types in here. So for this rule, I've got anyone that comes in with a Fabricam.com. I'm actually going to assign a role that's a Fabricam.users role. And the reason why that's important is if I'm federating with multiple ADFS customers or partners, this allows me to secure content based on Fabricam.users. So I don't have to ask them to set up particular groups. I can actually just add groups to them if I want to do generic types of federation or generic types of security just based on logins that they've got coming in. So I don't have to do it by user-based logins. I'm going to go ahead and add one more rule in here. So in our scenario, we're going to want to separate out these users because we've got a web app that we don't want to give them access to. So by putting in a custom rule, I can actually prevent them with a web app policy from getting into secure type of content. So this allows me to have my ADFS set up. I can still have my corporate users coming into certain parts of the web apps, and I can actually prevent other partners and kind of guarantee my admins that, hey, these other partners aren't going to get in, even though we have them federated in ADFS. So I'm going to put this role in here, and we'll basically, this will be a non full-time employee status role. So see in here, basically what I'm doing is for any Fabricam.user, I've got a role which is going to basically be a SharePoint role that is a non-FTE status. So that will allow me to actually prevent them accessing certain web apps, because I'm going to put a web app policy of a deny on those web apps. Okay, and just from an ADFS standpoint, so what we end up doing is we trust the Fabricam domain. We also trust our own Active Directory. And then we actually pass those through into the SharePoint land. So if you look at our SharePoint environment, it's our portal.contoso.com. And if we look at the rules on that, we're just passing through email address, and we're also passing through any security roles that come in through our Fabricam or come in through our Active Directory as well.
So this part here is covering the first part of that slide where we said getting claimed. This is all about getting claimed here in this scenario.
So in the SharePoint environment, quite simply, just for a kind of recap for those of you that haven't been through this, the SharePoint environment, we really care about mapping the claims that come into SharePoint. So when you look at the SharePoint world, you're looking at mapping, in this case, I'm mapping email address. So you see the first one is email address. And then I'm also mapping an incoming claim of role. So that what that means is any roles coming through, the email address coming through is going to be my identity. Roles coming through will also come through and pass through in SharePoint. And I'll show you how we can actually augment that as well. But out of the box with just script and ADFS, this is what you end up doing. So basically, I just set up my trusted identity token issuer. We log into the ADFS, we pass those through, and then you'll see how that actually works in the SharePoint environment. Okay, so now I'm going to go ahead and hit my portal. Actually, I'm going to do it in secure mode so it doesn't have any cache credentials. So what happens is, out of the box, if you federate with multiple ADFS, you'll actually get each of the ADFSs that you're federating with in a picker type of environment. So that way, if we want to log into Contoso, we can. If we want to log into Fabricam, we can as well. We could also override this. So if we have a custom login page, we can actually send them to a custom page and not have to go through this picker page here. So I'm going to log into the Fabricam just to kind of show you what the claims look like coming through. So what this does is once we pick Fabricam, it's going to actually redirect to our fabricam.adfs domain. So we get the form. And again, this is just the out-of-box ADFS form. So I'm logging in as Brad Sutton. It logs in, validates it on Fabricam. It actually passes back through to my Contoso ADFS. And that actually goes through the map claim provider, the trusted issuer that SharePoint has set up into the SharePoint environment. Okay, so now I actually got into the portal. You'll see that I'm Brad S. at Fabricam.com. And if I actually go into this claim page where I can kind of view the claims that are in there, you'll see a couple things in here. One of the things that you'll see is I've got my named identifier is basically my email address because I've mapped that. I've got my email address. I also have these roles set up. So you'll notice that that rule that I put into ADFS comes through as non-FTE status. That means I can secure content or deny content based on that because I know that's coming in. I also have some AD users that or AD groups that they're passing us, which is the partner sales and partner portal users. And I didn't show this, but I'm actually augmenting those and putting Fabricam dot in front of those. And that way, I can actually easily understand that this is coming from this partner, and this is how we can secure this content for this one individual partner. And then finally, I actually saw that rule that I showed you of the Fabricam.users. We also can do that, where that way we can actually guarantee we can just do role security based on the users that come through on the Fabricam without having to rely on individual user IDs. So now I'm going to go in and log in with a Contoso user to kind of show you where the problem kind of comes up. So everything's great. I'm able to log in. I'm able to see roles I can secure on. I can see their email address. But now there's potentially an issue where we want to talk about kind of better user experiences. So I'm going to go ahead and log in again. I'm going to log into Contoso domain. Okay, so now I'm logged in with Karen, just to kind of show you what the People Picker experience looks like. So when I go into site permissions, and I go to grant permissions, so say, for example, now we've got a marketing person that needs to put some content out there and actually give this content to their partners. So when they go in here and they actually do a search, you'll see I've got ADFS 2.0 server set up, I've got email addresses, I got role. The reason why those are set up is because those are the claims that I've mapped into the SharePoint environment. The problem with this, though, is I could certainly say cam.users and secure content by this. Makes sense. I have Fabricam users in there, and I want to actually just do all Fabricam users might have access to this. We'll go ahead and add this. Say OK. And we can say OK on that. So that's fine. But as Israel was saying earlier, we've got a resolver issue where if I fat finger something or say I just type something, you know, completely kind of bogus in there, we also resolve those. So ADFS or basically SharePoint, if it's actually in a claims-based mode and it doesn't have a search method for resolving those claims, it will resolve everything to true. So that means that I can actually really kind of resolve anything and just put it in there. So when you talk about general users and securing content in SharePoint, that's not the greatest user experience. So you're going to have just kind of invalid claims everywhere or invalid security credentials everywhere. So we really want to kind of better that experience. So the way that we better that experience is we have to write a custom claim provider. So what I'm going to show you now is going into the custom claim provider and enabling that to have kind of that better user experience. So I've got a PowerShell command here. Enable config dot just one. You'll see the password that I put in there. The reason why I put the password in there is we're actually leveraging a service account to actually go query Active Directory, and we're using that secure store to kind of do that query. So this is actually going through there and actually setting up that provider for us, and I'll kind of show you what that looks like. So the one thing that it does is, or a couple things that it does, is as Israel was saying before, we have a providers collection. So the first thing we want to do is when we implement a custom claim provider, we want to turn that off by default. So we don't want everything to automatically use that custom claim provider. But what that means is if we do have a web app that wants to use that custom claim provider, we've got to add that to that web app. So that's the first thing that this does is adds the custom claim provider that we're going to leverage for securing this content. The other thing that we can do is on that claim provider, we have also what's the trusted issuer. So the STS, is in this case, it's leveraging ADFS to actually do the logins. We can actually override that in our people picker to actually leverage our claim provider to do the searching for that. In this case, I'm not going to do that. I'm actually going to leverage both ADFS and the claim provider, but we can actually eliminate the ADFS lookup on the people picker, and I'll show that to you when we're in there. The other thing that we're doing is the other thing that we're doing is the deny rules. So if you look at the deny rules, I've got based on a claim role, I can actually put a deny rule in there for the non-FTE status, and I also have another one in there for a password-only deny rule. So you see on there, it's web app policies for denies, and I just add that into the environment as well. And this will actually prevent people coming in from the Fabricam environment to access one of those domains. Okay, so my script ran. My claim provider should be configured now. And we'll kind of talk about what the better experience then on that. Okay, so now I'm still logged in with Karen from Kitoso. And now you'll see actually in here this AD Secure Store Claim Provider. So this is my custom claim provider name. And like I said, I could have actually bound this claim provider to this ADFS server. So what that means is if I did that, and it's one line of PowerShell, you would actually only see the claim provider in there. You wouldn't actually see the ADFS secure or the ADFS 2.0 server anymore. Instead, you would actually just resolve through your custom provider. So now when I actually do my search on Karen, so of course you'll still see the bogus ones here, but now when you see, you'll see actually a real user of Karen in that we actually did a search against the Active Directory. We actually searched a separate force for that. And then we can actually secure content based on that as well. We also do security based on role or groups, AD groups as well. So you can see there's a group that found in here, Contoso Portal with admins. So it's actually going out there, really finding users, really finding groups, and we can secure content based on that. And so just to kind of give you a view of what the custom claim provider looks like, I want to point out kind of a couple of the different methods in there to kind of highlight some of the things that you need to know for implementation. So first off, when you're implementing a custom claim provider, in this case, we're implementing a XAML provider. So it's off of SP claim provider. And then one thing that that's important to notice is when you implement the claim provider, you're going to want to implement the fill claims types. So it's important that you get this right because two claim providers cannot fill the same type unless it's a role type. And what that means is if I've got, say I got email address and I've schemaed it the same way, so it's the same URL, same email address that it's going to resolve. It executes through all your claim providers and then tries to resolve a match based on the claim provider. And if two of them are matching that, you'll never really get to the resolve. So it's always going to kind of go through a loop of not being able to really resolve the claim providers or the claim types. So in this case, I've actually got a custom claim type mapping that I've got. And then I've also got the claim type map plus a user ID. And I'm also doing a role claim type, which is generic. So for the groups, any claim type provider can actually secure based on role type. So you can always just add a role type if you need to have kind of role-based security. So the next thing that we need to do when we implement the claim type provider is we need to do fill claims for entity. So in this case, if I was really binding them, I wouldn't actually have to have this actually resolved at all. What this is for is if I need to add additional claims to the environment, so when you log in, I need to add, maybe I need to go query a database and add additional roles or groups that you belong to based on an HR database. Well, this is where you'd do this. So the user logs in. It actually will go out and query based on the ID that they've got. And you could actually add any type of anything you can query, you can basically add a claim to is what it kind of comes down to. So in this mode, the one thing to notice, though, is this doesn't execute in a web context. So this actually is executing inside the SharePoint STS. So you don't have web context. It's actually running under the WCF service control. And what we're doing in here is you see this requested message. We can basically, any claims that aren't mapped, we can actually get still. So if the claims are getting passed to SharePoint, but SharePoint doesn't map it, you can still go out under the SharePoint WCF requested message and grab any incoming claims and parse those and add those to your environment. And that's what I'm doing here is basically if you look at this get incoming claims, I'm actually getting it off the requested message. And then I'm going through and all the incoming claims, I'm actually remapping it. Any of them that are role claims, I'm remapping them to role claims for my specific provider. So next step, what we want to look at is the people picker entities kind of better that search experience. So the first thing, when we actually open up People Picker and we actually do the search for a person, we do the wildcard search, that method's actually fill search. So when that actually gets executed, when I do that search query in the People Picker, it actually executes this fill search method. And it passes the search pattern to it. So what we do is we check to make sure that we're resolving the right type of claim. And then what we do is, in this case, we actually go out and we query our Active Directory. We grab any users or any security groups that match that, and then we go ahead and create the people picker entities from that. So in here, we've got we get the search results. We go ahead and grab, in this case, we'll grab a user entity, and then we go in and we create the picker user picker entity. So if you'll see in here, what I do is we create an entity, and then we set the properties. So this actually determines what gets displayed, how does it get resolved when you actually pick a person within the people picker. And then we're setting some additional properties as well. So if there's different views of the people picker, if there's different views of the security on who has security to the site. We actually fill all those out. So we've got email address, we've got SIP, we've got some additional displays too. So there are, we're not missing anything. It actually looks just like it would if it was an AD user. And then finally, once we actually do that, after you've actually done the search, you've actually picked a person in there, then finally what it does is once it returns back to the people picker, you get the underline, that's actually the fill resolve. So the fill resolve method actually does that secondary check to make sure that that entity can be resolved based on the picker that you've got. And then once that's actually resolved to true, then we're done with that, that custom code, customization.
Flip back. Nope. Flip back. Wait. All right, as we're flipping back, any questions on kind of the flow of how to augment that experience? What that experience looked like. Any questions? I was watching the audience and I saw a lot of weird faces. I don't know if that's that we didn't understand or that we're doing it wrong. So help us. If you have any questions on what we did, please let us know. Yes, sir. The Azure, so Office Azure does not have a default claim provider?
Yeah.
Yes?
Is that on purpose or is that announced later on?
Okay, so the question is if I'm federating with Azure, and make sure I got this right, if I'm federating with Azure, or ADFS, and I don't have a claim provider experience out of the box with SharePoint, is that on purpose?
Yeah.
Is that okay? So that's a good question. And really, there are two parts to that. One is we really want to make sure that we're providing the right experience within SharePoint. And in our case, if someone were to do that, that would probably be something on the Azure side. So just there's one part of it there as far as who would be the right person to build that. The second part of that would be if they would build that, what would they resolve? Because Azure ACS in itself can actually federate with other third parties. They can federate with other ADFSs. They can federate with Google and Yahoo and Live. So on the SharePoint side, it has no way of knowing who you're federating with. Therefore, it doesn't know what that interface is going to look like. So imagine searching Yahoo's directory for, you know, Bob at Yahoo.com. Where would you search? And then, for example, also LiveID. LiveID, you can have your Yahoo account as your LiveID. So then if you're federating with LiveID, we'd actually have to go that. So out of the box in a federated world, when we said federation is just complicated, that's one of those things that makes it pretty complicated is that you don't know. So what we did on our side is if you notice that Fabricam users, Fabricam roles, and those type of things, what we're trying to do in those scenarios is abstract away how you authenticated your actual user account and just give you information that we can use to secure. So in our case, we can secure on the fact that you're a Fabricam user, not that you're Bob at Fabricam.com. So that's what we're trying to do there. Did that help? Okay. Stretching or question? Stretching. Okay. Yes, sir.
Can you hide the STS picker? There was a different drop-down box. Is it possible to hide?
Yeah, on the ADFS when you come in with the two Contoso Fabricam.
Okay, so is it possible to hide the SES picker? So, yes, it is possible. There was something called Home Realm Discovery where it goes to try to figure out if you authenticated here before, it cookies you and makes sure that you come back. So there was a way to hide that. So what we did is we actually turned that on because if you're using Windows, it will try to authenticate you with Windows. Otherwise, it'll give you the picker. Yes, there is a way to configure that. And you'd be doing that through Home Realm Discovery or just making it prettier, right? Giving kind of the Azure experience, and we'll show you that. We have buttons of how you want to authenticate.
And what we'll also show you is when we show you the Azure side of, so we showed you how ADFS kind of does it by default. Azure does it a little differently, and Azure actually has a different way of doing Home Realm Discovery, and it actually does it by email address. So it looks at the email address domain, and then it redirects you. And it kind of looks cleaner from a form standpoint. We'll show you kind of that experience as well. Yep.
Okay. So the next scenario that you have to think about when you are integrating with claims and doing federation is claims migration. So the scenario that we looked at here was I've got a SharePoint 2007 environment or I've got a SharePoint 2010 environment, and I do want to migrate that over to claims, whether it's Windows claims or SAML claims. What does that experience look like? How do I actually move to another identity type? And the other one that we looked at is how do I actually move from SAML, right? How do I have to SAML, from classic to a SAML authentication? So actually, before I do that, the smiley faces and the little faces here show you kind of the supported experiences and the things that are available out of the box. Anything with the sad face means that it's either not available or just not supported, not recommended to try to do those things. Anything with a happy face means that it's supported out of the box. Anything with kind of the middle face is requires an interface that was introduced in SharePoint Service Pack 1 called the iMigrate User Callback, and we'll show you what that method looks like. In this talk, what we're going to do is focus on these three key scenarios: how to migrate from SAML claims to Windows claims, how to migrate from classic to Windows claims, and how would I migrate from classic to SAML claims. So we'll show you those three experiences through a set of code snippets. So how do we migrate from classic to Windows claims? Here we're showing some PowerShell. That's the supported way to do that. You could also do it through the API, but most of the times you can be doing this through PowerShell. The first thing we want to do is we want to get access to our current web application that we're ready to migrate. It will migrate any content database that's attached to that web application. So here what we're going to do is we're going to add a new claim, in this case it's a Windows claim, to that web application so that we can get in afterwards. So we do have to understand that as we're migrating, our admin account that currently exists as a classic admin account will also get migrated. So here we have to create ourselves an admin principle so we can get back in later on. We're going to give ourselves access to the web application using a full control web app policy. And the last step there is do the migration. So the thing to keep in mind is what we have around the purple box is everything above the purple box will be the same when we're using other migration methods. The only thing that's going to be different is that last thing in the purple box, and we'll show you an example of the difference there. But really, that's it. When you're going from classic to Windows claims, that's about it. You get access to your web application, grant your admin account access, you have access to get into it later, and then actually do the migration, and that's pretty much it out of the box. When you're doing custom claims migration, here's a recipe that we did for a customer where they were migrating a bunch of different web applications and content databases over to SharePoint 2010, and the scenario here is that I don't want real downtime, or I want to be able to migrate this maybe in a weekend, but I don't want it to fail. I want to migrate maybe a few of them at a time or all of them, but if something fails, I still want to provide our users access to that data. So in this case, what we're doing, the recipe for that, is we're going to create three web applications, our existing classic web application. We're going to mark that as read-only so that the end users can still get access to their content. I'm going to take a copy of that, and I'm going to mount it to what I'm calling here a dummy web app. That dummy web app just needs to have the identity provider and any claim providers associated with it that's going to help me with my migration. No one's going to actually authenticate to this web application. We're just using it as kind of a staging area. So in this case here, I can migrate three or four content databases at a time, or I can migrate one, and then once that's correct, then I'm going to take that, and I'm going to mount it when it's complete. I'm going to mount it to my real web application. This is just something that we did at another customer, and it worked well for them. You stage it, basically. You can also mount it directly to that permanent web application, but make sure that you have a backup of your database so that you don't have to go back and retake another backup and then redo that, right? Just put that in a staging area. So this does, because you're moving content databases around, from a storage standpoint, you have to make sure that in this case you've got three times your storage temporarily, but in a production environment, maybe you can only get away with two, so that you'll have to take your copy and then move it over to your other environment there. What we're doing is we're going to create a custom class, and I'm going to show you what that custom class looks like. And the last note there is we have time and patience. You want to make sure that you have a lot of time on your hands. This is not something you want to do very quickly because you are changing all of the ACLs inside of that content database. The larger the content database, the more time this is going to take. How do we migrate? Again, the rest of the beginning of this script is the same, so we omitted that. The last thing that's different here is we're going to create a custom assembly that implements the iMigrate user callback, and we're going to pass that to our migrate users command. And as our migrate user command runs, it's going to call back into our method, and our method is going to actually get access to that context and do the migration for us. What does that look like? In this case here, I've got some helper methods. And here, what I'm able to do is evaluate that incoming identity and do something with it. So here we're migrating from classic to SAML claims. So here I just created some helper methods that help me understand what type of account is it, and if it is a certain type of account, then I'm going to do something with it. And the do something really depends on how you're going to, what you're going to move it to. If it's an email claim, then you're going to move it to an email claim. If it's a UPN claim, then you have to go fetch the UPN for that print, for that user, and move it over. If you're taking users and moving them to a role claim, then you just have to implement that logic in your little helper methods to move them over. What that method actually looks like when you're digging into it, there are some different user credentials that you do not want to migrate because SharePoint uses them inside the box. One example there is that local system. That's a particular type of SID. You don't want to migrate that one. You want to leave that as a classic account. And if you don't believe me, you can go ahead and try that, and your web application won't work very well. Once we're in there, right, once we've evaluated the incoming SID, because we have a classic user account, once we've evaluated that, we evaluated what it is. In this case here, if we're going to migrate a particular group, here's something that's interesting with my customer. You may or may not run into this problem, but you might want to think about this. As I'm migrating groups, when they come in on a classic side, if it's a group, it's going to be a SID. When it comes in, SID to name. Yep. So I'm going to take, it's going to come in as a name, your domain slash group name. I have to turn that into a SID because I have to issue the SID claim for my particular group. If I'm using group names, I have to understand that if internally a group name of administrators, I have to make sure that I'm blocking that from any external federation partner, because if they have the same claim type and value of administrator, they could get access to something because I've secured it with the same issuance claim type and value. There are other ways around that, making sure that you don't issue the admin claim from different accounts or making sure that you're abstracting that. In the example that Nathan showed, he prefixed all the incoming groups with Fabricam dot. That way you don't have those collisions. But think through that. You have to think through how I'm going to migrate my group experience and what that group claim, when it's complete, what it's actually going to look like. So that's why we put the question mark there. We didn't want to infer. Most of the times, you're just going to take it and issue a group claim with the value of type SID. But think through that. If I've migrated to Windows claims and now I actually want to do SAML, what does that experience look like? I'm still doing the same iMigrate user, except in this case, I'm in a separate case statement, if you remember two slides earlier. And I'm still going to have my helper functions. That's kind of the pattern that I use at my customer. You can implement your own. Here we're going to be doing the same thing, except the incoming identity is going to be in the format of a Windows claims identity. And that format is I:W, it's a strange encoding, pipe, domain slash username for a Windows claim. So we're going to parse that out, and then we're actually going to turn it into a SAML claim, which in our case is going to get two pipes, the identity type pipe, the issuer pipe, and then the actual thing that you have on the end. So that's the kind of the mechanics of how you take a claim from a Windows claim, convert it over to a SAML claim. Some notes. We already talked about some accounts should not be migrated, but I'm going to reiterate it again. You do have to make sure that you do not migrate these particular claims because bad things happen. The last one there is you do have to configure your super user accounts and your search crawl accounts. So on the classic side, if you have a portal super user search in 2007, portal super user and your search accounts, you have to migrate those over. And what does that look like when you migrate those over? If you don't do it, you'll get errors like this in your event log. And what that's saying is SharePoint ECM cache, and this is really specific to the publishing features, but you will see it in 2010 if you use like the Wiki homepage feature. The Wiki homepage feature does enable, does use some of the publishing infrastructure, and this is really what this is for, is to take stuff out of the cache and put it on the web front ends. In this case here, we can't do it because there's some errors and we haven't configured it. So what we have to do is actually run some PowerShell in the correct identity and actually add those so that we get access. So ECM cache will be happy and you can remove these from your event log. What that PowerShell looks like, again, you'll have these with you in the slide deck. If you do get those errors, you just have to configure this. If you're using read-only databases or if you're publishing these to another side from a disaster recovery standpoint, you might want to log on as these user accounts one time. One thing to keep in mind with these accounts is that they're stored at the web application cache. They're stored at the web application level, so when they're not moved with the content database. So if you mount this content database to another web app, you have to either redo this or make sure that you've logged on. That way the principal actually makes it into the content database. All right, before we get started to the last two demos, which is kind of walking through some of these advanced scenarios, any questions on migrating claims users? Yes, sir.
Authorize the content, right? Because you haven't done anything to migrate those things yet.
Yep. Those things I'm giving out as a community party. If you walk by the office lounge or if you ask a question, we'll give you a band. That's for tonight after the Ask the Experts. So the question was, how do we migrate the actual credentials? In the actual thing that I have, so if I have a list or a document, I have ACLs on that document, how does that migrate? The migration actually handles that. So it moves the identity, and then it goes through the content database and actually fixes up the ACLs inside the content database so that it'll match what I've secured it and also what I get claimed with, so it'll match it.
So,
yeah, the script, yeah. So the out-of-the-box method is the migrate users, and my code, what it's doing is just intercepting that call and going through and saying, oh, I've got an NT Bob, migrate him over to SAML Bob, return that to SharePoint. SharePoint's then going to use that credential to resecure that content. It's a good question. Anything else? Yes, sir. So how about search? So the question was, how about search as it relates to... So the question is on a migration scenario, and I'm doing search. What happens to those credentials, that cache, inside of search? What happens to my index? I actually have to recrawl my content. So because the ACLs will change within my content database, that should prompt a full crawl anyway, an ACL crawl. But you might want to recrawl anyway, just to make sure that you've got it all fresh in the search database.
All right, so the next scenario we're going to show you is a little different. So we kind of talked about a common scenario of leveraging ADFS and also, you know, how we can actually be better off the ADFS experience or how we could do better on kind of Azure experience. But a lot of customers get confused that I've talked to where they say, well, it'd be great if we can actually secure content by attributes or we can actually secure content by, you know, something else that we want to query in our HR database. And that's totally possible. And so I can actually use AD and use my groups and everything today, but I can also add additional attributes on top of that and secure content other ways as well. And that's what we're going to show in this scenario. So in this scenario, what we're going to do is we're using AD, we're using our directory store, but we're also going to use a secondary authentication method or a secondary authorization method for the profiles. So what we're going to do is query certain properties in the profile database and actually allow users to secure content based on those profile attributes. And so what the other thing that we're going to show, well, I'll go ahead and get to it and kind of just show this. Hey, switched. So in this environment, I'm actually logged in as an admin user, and I'm actually going to kind of show you what the experience looks like. I'm actually using AD, Windows identities, and when I go in here, I've got a custom claim provider on here, which is a profile claim provider. So when I go in here and do a search, I actually see, you can see my profile claim provider, and I've got company configured. So what that means is if I want to secure content just based on a company, if they belong to Contoso, you'll see I resolve Contoso as my company and my profile claim provider. And I've got a couple of different companies in there. So for example, if I just do a search for all, I've got vPro, I've got Contoso, and I've got on-time companies. So this is if I wanted to secure big blocks of content based on companies that are coming in that have individuals belonging to those companies. But we can also take that one step further. And what we can actually do is, in this case, I've actually got a claims manager set up. Because what I realized is if we start securing by attribute, What happens is marketing comes in there and goes, well, we really want to secure based on, you know, this other field in the marketing department. Or HR will come in specifically and say, well, you know, we want to secure based on employees. So we want to do employees that are managers or levels, certain levels. So what you can do in here is this little custom screen that I set up, and I can actually say, let's secure by content or department because our groups or our requirements changed. And then maybe HR, I've got business connectivity services set up as well. I'm feeding into my profile store from an HR database. So now I've got employee group that I want to secure by. And HR came back again. They said, well, no, now we got to do by level. And now we've got to do by employee type because we want contractors or full-time employees. So we'll do that too. Again, that's great. So we can secure all by this as well. So now when I go back into my my site permissions and I query that, now I can secure by anything. So now when I go in here and I say, you know what? Actually, let me secure some stuff. I'll go into this strategy collaboration, and I just want maybe the strategy department to actually have permission in here. So now when I go in and grant permission, we'll say strategy. So you see I've got two departments that are strategy. We'll say strategy consulting, and we'll go ahead and secure that content based on that. So, okay. Oops, not.
You got to give it a permission.
Oh, yeah. We'll go from full. Demos. Okay, so you notice in here when Israel's going through kind of the claims encoding, you'll see that we've got strategy consulting, but we also have what the claims encoding looks like on there as well.
I'm going to zoom that.
And just kind of show you one more scenario at that.
Can you zoom that real quick?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can you zoom that? Yeah, so here what you notice is because we're adding claim types on the fly, each of those will get encoded differently. So in this case here, this one got encoded as the AE character.
Oh. So if I want to go ahead and just kind of query for other permissions, you'll see that if I ran just a general command, which I probably wouldn't want to do in a production environment, I'd want to probably limit this based on certain kinds of codes that they put in. But you'll see in there I've got companies, I've got departments, all my departments come through. And I've also got employee groups, contractors, associates, managers, employee levels that are coming through my BCS connection. And I've got employee types, contractors, employees, and then I've got just my regular security groups and AD as well. So it gives us a lot of flexibility on taking just a Windows secured environment, enabling claims, Windows claims, but also augmenting those claims with a custom claim provider that can kind of query anything else as well. And this is basically the reason why we kind of went this approach was it allows us to actually have some configuration with that, and it doesn't become a code problem anytime your requirements change. So I just want to show one other thing then when I log in with a different user. Let me go up a level. So now when I log in as Brad, just kind of want to show you what those claims look like. So I've issued a custom claim for each of those. I could have done them as roles as well, but I wanted to have some more granularity on how I'm controlling those permissions. So you'll notice that in here, Brad got a claim for every individual configured claim that we've got. Whether I've secured content by those or not, it's important that on fill claims for entity that we actually fill any of the entities that we need to so that when we do that claim comparison in our list or documents, we can say, hey, is he part of this employee? We don't resolve those real time. We basically, on login, we fill all the claims for that person. And then on resolving of authorization, we do that based on the content side. So the claims versus getting claims, like Israel was talking about. So you'll notice in this case I've got all different custom ones, and then they're all got their values that came from Active Directory or from the profile store for Brad. So strategy consulting, Contoso, employees, employee, he's a manager, and then he's got 10 for the employee level. Okay. Oh. All right, so the other scenario that we're going to show, and by the way, we've got these code samples and a lot more details on my Microsoft blog, too. So it's blogs, it's MSD and blogs, and it's intdev, E-N-T-D-E-V. But the other scenario that we want to show is maybe we can also use for sharing out files temporarily. So in this scenario, we've got maybe a marketing scenario where we've got to share a document with a marketing firm. We don't have ADFS set up. What we're going to use potentially Public Federation. Actually, in this case, we do have ADFS, but we also have Public Federation set up as well.
Right. So in this case, the marketing department has a set of documents that they want to share, but they don't necessarily want to provision those user accounts. They don't want to set up shadow accounts or anything for those users. They want to be able to just grant their email addresses on their Public Federation site. But they want to do it temporarily. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to create a custom solution, and that custom solution creates what's called a sharing token. And Nathan will get into the details of that sharing token. We're going to go ahead and email that sharing email the link to the document to the end users on the Public Federation side. And we're going to grant them access to our documents. They're going to come in. We're going to collaborate. So we're not truly doing RMS or anything. What we're doing is we have a document that we're going to temporarily work on. They can download it. They can upload it. They can download to our environment, their environment, collaborate on it. And when they're done, what I want to do is I want to actually expire that particular claim. And when it's expired, I don't want them to get access to that document again. So there's some interesting challenges that we have to solve here. And we're going to do them all through custom claim providers. One of the interesting challenges is how do we grant permissions to an end user when we don't know that user account, right? We've shown how you actually grant the identity, but how do you do that when you don't know the user account? And the other thing is how do we actually do the temporary sharing? How do we expire that token? And we're going to solve a few of those problems on the scenario that Nathan's going to show you in a minute. How do we do that? We're going to do that with a custom claim provider. We're also going to use what we call a custom claim generator. It's actually just a piece of code that's going to hash a bunch of values together and create a custom claim type. We have a custom database where we're storing our claims tokens. And then we're going to do a custom ribbon extension to make it easier for the end users to actually manage that. And it's best with ad hoc collaboration and public federation with external users. So all IT has to do is set up our Azure ACS. Once that's complete, anyone that I've federated with in Azure ACS actually gets access to our environment.
Okay, so in this scenario, I'm logged in as Brad Sutton, AD user. He's actually in a potentially like an extranet scenario. And I'm going to actually pick some documents. And you notice in here we actually created a custom ribbon control where I'm going to temporarily share this document out. So I've got a marketing firm that I want to share documents out to. I could go ahead and share this out to the marketing person. In fact, actually, in this case, I'll go ahead and share this one out with my Microsoft ID. So we've got Public Federation on this. So we can actually leverage Azure for federating using Azure ACS. And I'm going to kind of show that in this scenario. And then we can also pick how long those documents are going to be shared out for. So in this case, we'll go ahead and say for 2 days. And I'll go ahead and share that. And we'll go ahead and close that. So what I did was shared that with nathan.miller@microsoft.com, and I also shared it out for 2 days. So what it does is creates a hash token based on days, who I am, and then my trusted provider, which is Azure ACS in this case. So all Azure really cares about is I trust Azure, and then anyone that Azure trusts that can actually authenticate and send an email address through a Gmail account, Yahoo account, a Facebook account, I can actually leverage any of those as secure tokens, plus my date algorithm for how long I'm going to share this out. I'll go ahead and share one more out, too, because it may be a scenario where you don't want to use Public Federation, but you can also use ADFS like what we showed earlier as well. So we'll go ahead and do for Fabricam, and we'll share this one for, say, four days. Go ahead and share that. Okay, so now when I go to my site, just to kind of make it easier for the end users, we've got a sponsors file. So we call it kind of, if I share any files out there, I have a quick, easy way to unshare things. Otherwise, they'll expire under the time frame that I actually said they were going to expire under. So in this case, I've actually got one document shared with Karen. I've got two documents shared with nathan.miller@microsoft.com, which we'll go ahead and use my Facebook account to kind of log into. Okay, so now I'm going to go in here as leveraging Azure to grab those documents. You know, I'm going to log in as safety mode just so you can actually see the login happen. Otherwise, it might cache credentials and just log me in. Ignore the untrusted token. Okay, so this is when we talked about kind of Azure does Home Realm a little differently. So what Azure does, default screen, Azure gives you which sign-ins do you allow, Yahoo, Google, Facebook. I allow each of these. I just grab the email address and trust those passing through. So it really doesn't matter if I use my Nathan.Miller@Microsoft.com, and I've got that set up as a Yahoo or Google or Facebook account. It's just going to trust that and actually send those through. If I actually had ADFS set up, this is how it does Home Realm discovery with ADFS, is it does it based on that email domain and actually routes you that way. So in this case, I'll go ahead and say my Facebook account. We've got network access, which is a good thing. So it prompts Facebook security, prompts you with a normal Facebook account.
Nathan.
I'll go ahead and log in.
Nathan.Miller.
Oh. Right, right. Nathan.Miller@Microsoft.com. My login, I go ahead and log in. Goes through Azure. It actually, Azure is trusted in my SharePoint as a SDS, and then I'm actually logged in. And you'll see I actually have access to those two documents that are shared out. I actually don't have access to anything else in the site. So what we're doing is just adding our read-only credentials to those two accounts. That way I can go ahead and retrieve those. I can open them up, save them down, whatever I need to do. But if I actually try to browse to that site, you'll notice I get access denied because we're really kind of controlling the scenario just on those claims in particular. And so if you want to see kind of what that looks like, we've got our temp sharing tokens in here. We've enabled temp share. So we've got a temp share enabled token, which actually controls some of the ribbon controls. And then we have that hash token that says, hey, this is actually a valid ID with a valid share date on there. Once that date expires, when we fill that entity for that user, we just stop giving them that token so they can't access that document anymore. It doesn't have anything to do with really their ID at that point. It really is about trusting that token. Okay. That's it.
Back.
Nope.
All right, so some quick hints on building custom claim providers. As you saw earlier, they're good for searching, good for giving the search experience, good search experience for end users, and also good for resolving users. Quick heads up, they do all fire, so you have to keep in mind that they fire and they also fire it multiple times. So if ever you're doing anything like going out to an external system, you might want to profile to make sure that external system actually comes back in a timely amount of time, because anything that will stop the authentication process or kind of block it will cause performance issues and help desk calls. So you want to make sure that you understand that process. The claims are immutable within SharePoint, so once you issue them, you cannot change them. You can only reissue them if you want to make a change, so that users will have to log out and then log back in. The incoming claims are not available. We showed an example of that. There's a reference to that blog post that actually shows how to add that, how to add all the claims at augmentation time. Some more hints. We talked about the encoding and the casing. Here the note there around welcome email support. When you're building things like, for example, the temp share, the profile claims, if you wanted to secure things based on department, you probably want to add the user account, but make sure that you tell your users, don't check the box that says email the entire department. You can implement email support within your claim provider where you just specify, okay, here's the email address I want you to use when you're actually sending out that email. But you do have to keep that in mind in your claim provider that when they add users, if they're adding federated users and they check the box, you have to implement that code that actually sends that end user that email address. Because within SharePoint, it's only going to look internally at its own database to actually find that user account. If it doesn't find it, it's just going to continue, and that email will never go out. So you have to actually implement that welcome email support. One note there is around identity resolution, what we call responsible, not responsible. You'll see that in the code examples if you download them. But here what we're saying, and Nathan hinted on this, multiple claim providers probably shouldn't be responsible for the same claim type. So if you're resolving, let's say, three or four different claim types, only one claim provider should resolve department, another claim type should resolve the temp sharing token in our example. So just implement a piece of code that says responsible, not responsible. If I'm issuing that claim, then I probably should be responsible for it. If I'm not issuing it, then I should just probably let it go. Otherwise, you'll get a bad search and resolve experience. Some hints around debugging and deployment. When you are deploying these, understand that SharePoint is a farm environment, and you have things like apps called app servers, and you have other things called web front ends, and that's the way you deploy your WSPs when you actually target them. Thank you, I appreciate that. So you do have to create two different WSPs, one that actually deploys to an app server, one that deploys to a web front end. And the way you do that, one deploys the assembly, one actually deploys the registration of the claim provider to your app servers and your central admin. So keep that in mind as well. Around debugging, you are going to have to attach to multiple web apps, so, W3WP processes when you're debugging through these. Because it issues the claim providers in the SDS context, that's a separate W3WP process. So when you're trying to debug your claim provider, make sure you attach to, I usually just attach to all of them, but make sure that you attach to all of them. All right, so when you leave here today, hopefully you learned something around claim providers. We did have some fun with claims, and we built some pretty cool demos that you'll have access to. We do have a reference to that. We did share some general tips and tricks for claims-based authentication and some things that you have to worry about from a planning standpoint within SharePoint. All right, there's some related content that you can go to if you want to download more. You can find us later. We'll probably be at the SharePoint TLC booth tomorrow. We'll also be at Ask the Experts tonight. We do have references to other links. There's the EntDev blog post that Nathan talked about. We have some videos that show the same scenarios in action. So if you want to look at the blog post and actually look at the videos, we did post those. And Steve Peschka, if you're doing anything around SharePoint claims, definitely take a look. You know, keep his blog post handy. He posts a lot of information on SharePoint claims as well.
And on the code for the demos, I've got the walkthrough on the blog and a video of each. I'll put the link to the code out there in the next couple days, just because we had a refresh on the code.
All right, we got about 5 minutes left. I don't really want to hold you up. We want to make sure that we covered everything. Definitely thank you for coming. Thank you for attending our session. We really hope that you got something out of it. Thank you. And we'll stick around for questions. Any questions? No questions.